not when Paul is talking.
Sorry, you can read it.
Let's go ahead and call the meeting of the Stanislaus County Employees Retirement Association to order. Roll call, please.
Gordon Ford.
I'm here.
Donna Riley.
Here.
Maria DeAnda.
Here.
Jason Gordo.
Here.
Mike Lynch.
Here.
Jim DeMartini.
Here.
Darren Garrett.
Here.
Michael O'Neill.
Here.
Jeff Grover.
Present.
Joan Clendenin.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Are there any announcements?
Yes, we have a few announcements. Go ahead, Kelly.
I have an announcement. I wanted to announce that the notice of election for seat number 7 and 7A have gone out in the mail. They went out on the 17th, and people have received them. We've had some interest, so just wanted to let you know that those notices have gone out.
Okay.
For safety?
Safety, yes.
Okay, we have three other announcements. Just on the custodian bank RFP, it's the evaluation team has it right now, and where there's five people on that team, we will be meeting again on Friday. So that is moving forward. Unless one person comes all the way to the top of the pack, we expect to interview finalists either at the November meeting or December meeting. We plan to get this down to no more than two vendors for the board to meet with, but we won't know. We're not to that point yet. Just giving you a heads up that those are the meetings we would do that at. We also received notification from Raven, one of our direct lenders, and regarding a bridge loan that could possibly incur some UBTI tax related issues for Stan Sarah, and that's the unrelated business taxable income. And we sent this over to Hanson and Bridget Scott Smith for his review, and he has recommended that we can hold this part of its investments in an alternate fund and avoid the UBTI, which is a good thing to do because then we're no question. It'll cost us a little more, but that's how he recommended we do it. They gave us a couple of options. So I just wanted to let you know that, you know, this came across and we sent it off to tax accountant to look, counsel to check out. I do have a write-up here if anybody wants to actually look at all the details on it, just so you know what's going on as well.
Will that cost more than the tax would?
Potentially. But it's cleaner and better. The council thought that would be better for Stan Sarah in the long run. Okay. The third announcement is that Pyramus was scheduled to be here today, but in their scheduled time, they were unable to make it, and they've asked if they could possibly come in December. So if that's not a problem, we'll go ahead and let them do that. So that's all I have for announcements.
Okay.
Do we need to amend the agenda?
Yes.
No, they're not on the agenda.
Oh. We're notified by Josh Green, the fellow that runs Raven, that he'll be in town on the 8th of November. He doesn't know if he'll be here in time for lunch, but he would like to meet with any of us that would be interested in meeting with him. So
perhaps Kelly can help arrange
Let
that.
Kelly know if you'd like to be a part of that meeting. It'll be informal and it'll just be an update on what he's working on.
And you're obviously going to
be there.
Right?
I plan on being there.
Right.
I think Rick's planning on being.
Okay.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. We'll find a place.
Yeah.
And
he hasn't let us know yet if he's going to be here right after lunch or at lunch.
And what day?
The 8th. Mm-hmm. Friday the 8th. Yeah. Really interesting guy.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to do that.
The particular thing that Kathy was talking about is bridge funding for boxcars.
Oh. It's interesting.
Yeah. And it creates tax, which not many of them do for us, but in this case, it's like 17% plus whatever the tax is. So it's beneficial for us to be a part of it.
Right. And so in order to be better to be safe than sorry, we sent it off to tax council and got their opinion, and we went with what they suggested.
For that meeting with the Raven guy, is that a Brown Act issue?
We'll have to be careful about that, Mike, and we'll look into it, okay?
Thank you.
Well, it's one of those other things that if we're not doing any business, it's a different, if we're having a meal, it's a different deal. If we're having a meeting, then we can't have more than half of us here.
Okay. But we'll definitely be sensitive to that as we make the arrangements and see who all's going to be there.
Yes.
Depends on how good the food is.
And then they end up having a meeting.
If we invite the attorney to lunch, huh?
Always count on Jim to bring it to the relevant fact.
I'm going to bring up whatever
the news cares about. He might even have wine with it.
Okay, seeing no one here from the public, I'm going to dispense with reading the public comment advisement. Moving on to item 5, the consent items. There's only one item listed, 5A. So if you've had a chance to review that, I'll look to a motion to approve the consent calendar as listed.
I'll move to accept the consent calendar.
Okay, so we have a motion by Donna.
Second.
Second by Michael O'Neill. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Meeting on.
Did you approve the minutes, though?
That was.
Yeah.
It said item was.
Oh, that's the only item.
Yeah, that's it. Moving on to item 6, semi-annual performance report by LSV International Equity.
This is a conference call, so if everyone's ready, we'll get them on the phone.
Oh, she's doing that. I remember remind everybody that we were just there in their office in Chicago a couple months ago.
Right.
Four of us.
Sarah, and I'm going to put you on speakerphone
with our board.
There you go. Thank you. Hey. Good afternoon.
Hi, Keith.
Good afternoon.
Oh, I have Swami here with me. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon. I think we can move right into your portion of the presentation.
Okay, great. Thanks, Darren. Appreciate it. We will, I assume you have the copy of the materials. Familiar. We will just hit the highlights, and please stop us with questions you have, and we'll leave some, obviously, plenty of time for any questions that you have, but pretty straightforward quarter, 6 months since we last met in your at the board meeting in April. So just a couple things on the organization to report on the first two pages. No changes to kind of the product set at the bottom of the page, or employee ownership, or anything assets are essentially up with the market over the last 6 months. We've seen a nice move in the international markets, particularly in the third quarter. And at the end of September, assets under management were $77 billion and about $18 billion in the large cap value. Strategies, both developed and the ACWI XUS with emerging markets that you're invested in. On page 2, no changes to the key investment people in the middle of the page, Joseph, Swami, Puneet, and the rest of the team. But we are making some changes over on the operations and compliance side. We're in the process right now of looking for a new chief compliance officer. So we're going to split the role of COO and CCO that Tremaine Atkinson has held the last 15 years or so. Tremaine will be transitioning off both roles over time. Kevin Phelan, who you see as Director of Operations, will move into the COO role. And as I said, we are hiring from the outside a new CCO chief counsel. So it'll be kind of a combination. We haven't had an in-house lawyer, so this is an opportunity to kind of enhance that role from a standpoint of having both a new compliance officer that has a legal background. Other than that, don't expect to see any changes. And again, consistency in the middle of the page. The key people on the investment team, no changes to roles and responsibilities there. Any questions on the organization or firm?
Nope, doesn't look like it.
Okay, great, thanks. We can turn over actually to page four. Page three is just the growth in the account since we got started. So we are, I should note, we crossed the 10-year mark, so we really appreciate that. Nine years. So we hit the 9-year mark at the end of the month. Can't do my math, but 9 years at the end of September. And you see at the end of the quarter, the account was about $145 million in assets. Page four, just a couple of points. As I mentioned up front, we saw a nice recovery in the third quarter in the international markets. So the EFI benchmark was up over 10%, so 11.6%. The ACWI ex-US, which is your benchmark, dragged down a little bit by the emerging exposure in the quarter and for the year to date. So your benchmark, the ACWI ex-US, up 10.1% for the third quarter, and that brought the year-to-date performance to 10%. Again, emerging markets lagged. There's about a 20% difference between emerging and developed markets this year. But again, we're country neutral, so we're not making necessarily a bet on emerging markets. But we do find the emerging markets to be very attractive from a valuation standpoint, and Swami will touch on that in a few slides. Page five is your performance. And across the top, we have the annualized periods ending September 30th. And both gross and net, we can focus on the net of fee numbers, which is the second line, versus the two benchmarks, the core and then the value benchmark below. So since we last got together, the portfolio net of fees is up 8.3% versus 6.7% for the ACWI ex-US and 7.8% for the value benchmark. So over the last 6 months, we've added about 160 basis points to the of value added. Year to date, that brings us to about 280 basis points over the core benchmark and a little over 300 basis points over the value benchmark. So it's been a reasonable period of time. Value has started to come back a little bit. The European markets recovered a bit in the third quarter. So we are seeing some improvements. The European markets and the international markets have kind of lagged the U.S. a bit, but we are seeing, at least in the third quarter, some market improvement here in absolute returns. And then your relative returns have been reasonable. We've been able to add a little bit of value over and above the benchmark. For the 6 months, it's been a combination of we've been overweight areas like telecom, which have done well, and then underweight staples and materials, which have lagged a little bit. Staples is an area where it names like Unilever and British American Tobacco, kind of the big consumer products names, where there had been a flight to safety in the last 3 years or so that we had talked about. Those names have gotten quite expensive. We weren't holding those, which hurt us a little bit in maybe 2011, 2012, but have started to help this year. Areas where we've done well is like financials, materials, telecom. So it's been a few different areas of the market where we've been able to add some value over the last 6 months and over the last year. Questions on performance?
Anyone?
Okay,
nope.
If not, I'm going to turn it over to Swami and talk a little bit about how the portfolio is positioned and how it looks starting on page six.
Your portfolio is trading at 11.2 times forward earnings at the end of September, which is pretty attractive discount compared to the core benchmark, the MSCI ACWI ex-US, as well as the value benchmark. In terms of the overall valuations across markets, both the U.S. markets and the international markets kind of look fairly valued at this point. Emerging is trading at about a 20 to 25% discount to developed markets, both U.S. and international developed markets. So emerging obviously is quite attractive given the underperformance that emerging has experienced this year. If you look at the gain on page four, you can see that year-to-date emerging is down 4.4%, whereas the EFI is up 15%, and the S&P 500 is up 20%. So obviously, due to the underperformance this year, emerging looks pretty attractive from a valuation perspective. But overall, your portfolio is trading at pretty attractive valuations. and we're able to get a nice 3.7% dividend yield on your portfolio without having to make huge compromises on valuation. So we think that the portfolio is pretty well structured to perform well going forward. In terms of the portfolio characteristics, you can see that, you know, in general, overall, other than consumer staples, where we are underweight by almost 4%, most of the other areas we are kind of within, you know, 2%, 1%, underweight, overweight. So the two areas where we have a big underweight are telecom and consumer staples, which is, again, as Keith mentioned earlier, look pretty expensive due to the flight to safety phenomenon. The other areas are all pretty much well within, you know, 2%, 2.5%. The other big difference that I will say is that the information technology, we are underweight in the active portfolio, which is different from our U.S. portfolio where we do like the old technology stocks. This is not the case in international markets because the you know, we have companies like Intel and Cisco, which are kind of very expensive in early 2000 but now look pretty attractive and look like value companies. This is not the case in international markets. And the other area where we have a reasonable overweight is energy. But I don't think the this portfolio structure will change significantly over the next 6 months, and the valuations will play out for a while. So we think that in terms of valuations and in terms of sector underweight and overweight, what you see now is what you're likely to see over the next 3-6 months, definitely for sure. And then on page 8, you look at the country weights. Again, you can see we are, in terms of overall portfolios, you know, the benchmark has 21% in emerging and about 79% in developed. And your portfolio is structured pretty much the same way, about 21% in emerging and 79% in international markets. As you know, our approach is very country neutral. We don't try to take, you know, big country bets. There's nothing in our model that says, you know, choose this country over the other. So we're going to be usually within plus or minus 1%, 1.5% of the country weight, and that's the case here.
We'll stop there and see if there's questions on either power structure, performance, any questions outside of that?
Nope, we're good. Keep going.
The one thing I just wanted to quickly point out to you, talking about the relative valuations across different markets, if you turn to page 13, which talks about how cheap are cheap stocks, you can see how the various markets are positioned in terms of our portfolios. You can see our U.S. large cap value portfolio is trading at about 12 times forward earnings. The international large cap value is at about 11.6 times, very similar to U.S. And the emerging markets is trading at about a 20 to 25% discount, 9.2 times. So the active portfolio, which is kind of a 21% emerging and 79% developed, is kind of the valuation is a, kind of a weighted average of those. And then if you turn to page 14, which looks at the benchmark, you can see the S&P 500 is trading at about 15.5 times forward earnings. Based on the data over the last 40 years, S&P 500 valuations seem to be in line with the median valuations we have observed over the last 40 years. And you can see MSCI Emerging Markets is at about 1.5 times. Again, at the market level, emerging markets are trading at a significant discount to the developed market. And then on page 11, you know, as a quick recap of our model, as you know, there are three major pieces to our model. How cheap a company is, and how poorly it's performed in the past. So we are a contrarian investor. We like companies that have underperformed over a long period, which is why they tend to be cheap today. And then, of course, we look for some indications of a turnaround or a recovery, which is where the momentum and the improvement block comes in. So we're looking for, think of it like a hockey stick with a long tail in terms of for a long-term underperformance, and then it bottoms out, and then you see some evidence of a recovery before you buy the company. So we have about 60% weight to value, 15% weight to long-term performance, and about 25% weight to momentum. So three-fourths of the weight in the model goes to value. And then, of course, if you look at what, in terms of valuation, that we pay a lot of attention to is the cash flows and earnings. How high the cash flows are relative to current price, current enterprise value, how high the earnings are relative to current price. The company has to have very strong cash flows and earnings relative to current valuations, current prices, for us to be able to buy that stock. So the focus on cash flows naturally means it's a focus on quality. And then in terms of improvement, we pay a lot of attention to fundamental improvements, improvements in profit margins, improvements in earnings, revenues, cash flows. So a whole variety of things we look at before we would buy a company that we think is very attractive on cheapness alone.
Yeah, could I ask a question?
Of course.
Yeah, on page 10, on the country, when you break it down by different countries, we have an investment in Spain in Repsol. Isn't that the country that just had a bunch of stuff nationalized by Argentina?
Yeah, you know, they did. There was part of their exposure was to, you know, Argentina. And that was, an issue where their operations there were, essentially, I think you turned right, was nationalized by the government. But it's, it's a company that is, well diversified. It that happened earlier this year, and it's still a company that remains, attractive on our valuations, and it. It had, some impact shorter term, but that's a situation where we still find it attractive and think that it's, the analysts and others have not, brought down their estimates to such a degree that we would be, moving out of that name.
But did it impact your momentum scale? I mean,
that's a very good point. The near-term momentum, the performance was poor. But as Swami pointed out, we don't put so much weight on momentum. The valuations continue to drive that, and there's a whole range for us. So we wouldn't be buying more of Repsol. The momentum would, and as you point out, would make it less attractive. So it's not a name we would be buying. But we have a pretty decent hold range, and it's kind of in that range right now, where we wouldn't be buying nor would we be selling in the name. Because the valuations continue to kind of drive things.
Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. You can continue on, I think.
Okay. I think, that's most of the comments that we had. I think one thing we'd point out is that, even though the portfolio has had a nice run in the last year, it's up 20%, we still find, as Swami pointed out, the portfolio to be attractive from a valuation standpoint. So, we still feel as though there's some good opportunity in this portfolio, trading at less than 6x cash flow, and with almost a 4% dividend yield while you're waiting. So we still, find a lot of attractive names, not only in the developed markets but the emerging, and feel pretty confident with the way things are structured here.
Okay, does anybody have any further? Paul, you have anything?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Keep it up. We look forward to you guys doing the same thing next year.
Great. Yeah, no, we appreciate your confidence in us, and thanks for coming out and visiting us earlier this year. And we look forward to seeing you in April of next year, and continued added value here.
All right, Keith. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Swami. Okay, moving on to item 7, SIS. Paul?
Thank you. We're going to go over the monthly performance report, which was a handout along with the top 10 holdings. Due to two factors, we had to do a handout this month, one being that this meeting takes place as early as it possibly can, the 22nd, being that the first of the month was a Tuesday. And secondly, our firm had trouble getting the monthly feed from the custodian this month. So we did prepare a handout in the familiar format. And September was a very, very strong month for equities, as illustrated on the first page of the index returns. The Russell 3000 was up 3.7%. Small caps in the U.S. really were strong, with the Russell 2000 up 6.38%. And you can see the 3 months, which is the first quarter for us for fiscal year 2014. Russell 3000 up 6.35%, and small caps up 10.2%. International stocks, as Keith and Swami just said, were actually stronger than the U.S. markets in the quarter ending September, with the ACWI ex-U.S. up 7% roughly. And we got some help from fixed income finally, as yields kind of plateaued in intermonth in September, with the 10-year at 2.97 at its height, but it closed the month at 2.6% area. So the Barclay cap aggregate was up almost 1%, up 95 bips for the 1 month period. And spread products, high yield and emerging market bonds had strong months as spreads narrowed a bit also. Fast forward, 10 years were up 8.1% for the Russell 3000, 9.2% for the non-US equities, and 4.6% for bonds. So the last 10 years, despite the roller coaster and all the volatility in between, have been fairly strong returns now for the markets. The next page, the summary investments. The total portfolio stood at $1.618 billion. We have put in an extra column of target policy allocation. That is the allocation adopted almost a year ago. Our current policy reflects building up in steps towards the target as we introduce the new asset classes, direct lending, infrastructure, and build up real estate. And we'll do that in a step fashion as investments are made and capital is called in the private investments. With the current and target allocations at the bottom of the page of each of the individual managers also. Page two, the change from the prior month and year, an increase in $54.5 million from the prior month, including the benefits paid, and up $182.5 million, or roughly 12.7% net from the prior year. Driving that is obviously our equity allocation. Domestic equities were up $25 million for the month, international $19 million. So 45 of the $55 million positive change from the two equities, domestic and international. Page three, looks at each of the managers. One note is that we have let, kind of consciously, the domestic equities run a bit. They still are within the range, at the upper end of the range. We've started with the small caps, as LSV illustrated. The U.S. small caps tend to be the most expensive part of the market on public market equities. We started to use small caps as funding for direct lending in the latest round in October from Capital Prospects, and we'll look to take Legato as a source for the next call. But we have let those equities run a bit within range, and that has added value as equities continue to go up, even in October. Page four, cash levels tend to be low. You take out fixed income, we're running about $24 million in cash on the $1.6 billion fund, so 1.5% in cash at the manager level for equity managers. Page five, the performance. On a preliminary basis ending September 30th, and it's been kind of the same good story for the last year plus now, that we've had good returns, our active managers overall have added value, and we kind of outpace our policy index once again by a small amount, but when you add it up, it turns out to be very strong returns. All four U.S. equity managers for the month of September added value, particularly Delaware and Dodge & Cox are two large caps. And you can see the 3 months fiscal year-to-date alpha over 2% by Dodge & Cox, Delaware, and Capital Prospects, and Legato 79 bips. Fixed income managers, PIMCO had a strong month. Good to see, 1.38 versus 95 bips. It should be noted Dodge & Cox had two large outflows during the month which affected their returns. One was the monthly retiree payment that goes out, but both fixed income managers also funded a large direct lending capital call also. which had some effect on the return of Dodge and Cox, although it was a positive return. And for the 3 months, both fixed income managers have added some value above the Barclays Cap aggregate. Direct lending, the one note is Medley did have a write-down in the month. It shows as a fairly large effect because not much capital has been called, and they only had 3 investments at the time. They had purchased from a service provider a group of receivables, and they determined initially that the pay down of the receivables were slower than they had first expected, and hence they took a conservative view and wrote down that a bit. It should be noted that by no means, and I did talk to Josh about this after seeing it, that by no means they expect still to get back what they modeled initially. It's just up front there's a slower pay down than what they initially thought.
Okay, this is Raven.
Raven, yeah, yes.
You said Medley.
Oh, I'm sorry, Raven.
Okay.
Raven. This is Raven, reflecting that. Josh also said the next 3 months we should see material write-ups. Part of that will be new investments made, and part of that will be the offset of the write-down they took as they expect the receivables pay down to pick up. That had a material effect of about 8 basis points on the total plan, to put it in perspective. But overall, we should expect, at the end of the day, the same type of returns that Josh was projecting when we signed on with him. It's just a slowdown in the type of pay downs they were expecting from this one investment.
So this was an increase in their allowance for doubtful accounts?
Yes. International Equity, LSV has just presented, and they've had a good 3 months, offset somewhat by Pyramus. Partly that is the LSV being value, Pyramus being growth, and as Keith said, for the first time in a while for that 3 month period, value decidedly outperformed growth, so we would expect the value manager to do better. Real estate up 3.2% for the month. That's the next asset class we'll be looking at on a structure level, and looking at private real estate managers, potentially to hire one or two to bring us from 1.5 to 3.5% weighting with the new target, and potentially looking at the REIT index, whether to keep it or use it as a source, as we discussed last month, to hire 2 private equity, private real estate managers. Overall, the fund returned 3.58% versus 3.43 for policy. The quarter, 5.48 versus 4.99. So a very strong quarter performance, and we added about 50 basis points alpha also. Rest of the performance is the...
question.
Yes.
You're not concerned about the numbers with direct lending?
No. No. We expect initially a J-curve as they put the money to work and their investments to start paying off. This was a hiccup with Raven, no question, but it was on a very small asset base, so it has an effect on the performance on the month looking fairly bad. But as I stated, and in talking with Josh, that it's more of a timing of the cash flows coming back to us from that one investment more than anything else. The money, he believes, is still good, and that we won't, at the end of the day, have a negative impact from that one investment.
Is it a gap requirement or something that they would correct that on a monthly basis?
I think it's that, and just their conservative nature made them.
I know when I was there, they had just added an internal CFO that they hadn't had before. It
yes.
Sounds like maybe he's being a little extra zealous.
Yes, and I think we'll see that in the next 3 months. So we should expect nice write-ups the next 3 months is what I'm saying.
It'll take 3 months to know what's going on?
No, we know right now what's going on. I mean, we know why this happened, and we should know in the next 3 months, each month we'll see a point of view where, you know, we'll see the write-ups.
Why don't you explain it again?
Okay. They purchase from a service provider receivables. There's medical receivables from doctors with insurance companies, and there are other receivables, kind of loan. It's kind of like GE Capital has a book of receivables from, you know, their clients, business clients.
I think there might have been workers' comp in there too, wasn't there?
I don't recall that, but it could be. And these receivables get paid down, so they own now, they're the other side of the receivables, and they get paid down from the insurance companies and the doctors and the businesses that have these loans out. They model them to expect over a certain period of time cash flows to come back to them. What happened was the cash flows coming back to them initially after they purchased this whole group of receivables, the pay down was slower than they expected. That caused them to do a couple things. One, they checked in that receivables, the top 10 loans that made up the receivables, they, you know, did work on that. And then they randomly picked other loans within those receivables to see what was going on. Based on that analysis, Raven assured us, Stan Sarah, that there's nothing materially wrong with the loans. It's just the speed of payment of the cash flows coming back to them. One of them with the medical receivables was one issue with one of the doctors at a level that needs to be resolved. And the others were just slower pay downs than what they expected.
But you'll keep us updated.
Oh, yeah. And because of that, the other half was they decided to write down part of that with the expectation later on that will be written back up as the payments are received more on the back end than the front end.
So my understanding is the people that this money is owed to need the money quicker than they can expect to collect it. So they sell it to a group like Raven for a discount.
Yes.
And the faster that Raven can collect it, the higher the percentage of returns. So they're working this as hard as they can, the company that Raven lent the money to. So, and probably they had a projected income, and the actual income is less than projected. So something said they needed to write that down temporarily, and then they can recap it as it comes back in.
Yes.
So if I understand it, they like bought $1,000 worth of debt for $800.
Yes.
Okay.
Something like that.
And rather than show that $1,000 as an asset, they're saying, well, we're going to show it right now as a loss because we haven't collected the money yet.
Similar to that, but more complicated because they had to project how fast the income would come back.
Right.
And
right.
Slower than the project.
Right. Right.
But is it a lending portfolio? It's not that the doctor's now collecting that money. It's that Raven's collecting.
Yes.
The collections company.
Exactly. Exactly right. Yes.
So if we have a portfolio of deadbeats, we're not going to get paid.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The odds are there's going to be a mix of deadbeats and some payers.
I suspect in buying that loan up front, they projected some deadbeats in there.
Right.
So it's all relative to what they initially projected, right? And I think the issue is not that they believe that they'll get their money back as initially projected. It's just the rate of speed is different.
We're not receiving a preferred return. It's an actual return.
Yes.
And the
Raven, because they bought it
Raven
at
is five guys in an office, not much bigger than this. Okay?
Yeah.
So I suspect that there's a company out there that actually is a collections company that's doing the work.
Yeah, they've outsourced the collections to a team.
Yeah. And they're just trying to take the money and turn it at this 18 or 20%.
They use their capital, as you said, to buy it at a discount to par. Mm-hmm. And that's our rate.
And probably a good discount.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they wouldn't do it without. I would suspect at least a mid-teens net type of return. Yes, I will keep up on it, Michael, for sure. The rest of the report are the rolling 3 years, which I will skip. Two things on capital prospects to update. One is with InView Investment. I got a call from Maryland and then a letter sent October 18th that they had discovered one of their sub-managers, InView Investment in Chicago, had their total firm assets fall below $100 million in assets, which moved its registration from the SEC to the state of Illinois, effective March 2013. Minimum assets for the SEC registration had changed from 25 to 100 million, and thus many small managers had to deregister with the SEC and register with their respective states. We require all our firms to be SEC registered for good reason. That said, the state of Illinois does have an exemption for managers who can keep their SEC registration despite their asset level. There was a issue with InView not re-registering with the SEC, which put them out of our guideline compliance, not being SEC registered. Capital Prospects discovered this, was in contact with InView, who refiled with the SEC on October 17th, and they should be SEC registered by the end of November. Maryland was not happy, went on a plane to go out to InView and visit them and go over their procedures, controls, et cetera, to make sure that they are back in compliance, which looks like they'll be by the end of November.
What is their AUM? Do you know?
What's that?
Their AUM?
75 million.
What is that?
Assets under management. So the SEC will give you like leniency if you have 95 million or more. They give you 12 months to get it back over 100.
So what if this company doesn't?
Well, it appears because they're located in the state of Illinois, who exclusively manage institutional assets, they can keep their SEC registration irrespective of asset level, is what the letter says. So they're just lucky to be in the state of Illinois where they can do that. Obviously, if they were in another state and weren't qualified to be SEC.
If they were in California, it would.
Right, and we'd have to get rid of them.
They'd be in under state jurisdiction.
Right, and we'd have to get rid of them. By being in Illinois, they can re-register. And we'll keep up on that.
How much
sure.
money do we have with them?
We have, it's probably around $15 million.
So we're like 30% of their total portfolio?
15, 75, one fifth, 20.
10, 20. We're 20% of their total portfolio.
Right.
That's kind of big.
Well, could we have a discussion with Capital Prospects that, and ask them to move that? I mean, is that a.
Yeah, we can. Sure.
These folks have 8 or 9 of these different managers working for them. It's kind of like subcontractors. And they've been extremely responsive and they're.
Fund to funds.
Yeah.
And they're managers, yes.
And their performance has been really high. But
excellent.
If the gal got on the airplane and went to talk to him, my guess is that she put him on probation all by herself.
Yeah, yes. Yes, she was.
Although we were sitting in their conference room one day, and Jim pointed out that 2 or 3 of their funds all had the same. They didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah, golf.
Yeah. Okay. That said, their performance has been excellent.
It's been really good. They sold it off.
That's not on the list. Hasn't been on for a few months.
Yeah, it's off the list now. It was.
But that thing really climbed too. I've watched it. I mean, it's straight up.
Yes, it has.
It was last year.
We will keep it. The other thing with Capital is that another one of their managers, Ten Asset, went to Haybricks, a new firm in Boston. They followed the lead portfolio manager for 10 to Haybrick. And unfortunately, Haybricks has decided to fold shop right after this manager went there. So they had a replacement manager for 10 when there were questions whether 10 was survived. So they're going to be in the act of replacing this firm that 10 went to with this manager they had in place prior to that. So it's unfortunate.
That doesn't mean that we lost anything.
No. Again, the assets are custody at our BNY Mellon, and we have no lost anything. It's just this manager is ceasing operations where they will be replaced with another. This is the lone quantitative manager in the six-manager roster that will be replaced by another quantitative manager.
How does Illinois get an exemption from the SEC rules on the 100,000?
It's Chicago.
I don't know.
And is our interest in making it SEC for our people, is that because it's $100 million and not necessarily the state? So, I mean, does that jeopardize us being with them anyway, even though they have the Illinois?
Well, our guidelines, rightly, as I said, rightly want our investment managers to be SEC registered from a licensing and protection guidelines clause. I don't know why Illinois has that exemption. I can find out.
It's kind of just a weird letter of the law type thing.
Well, okay, but what's it mean to us, though? Because we pick $100 million for a reason. So these guys aren't meeting the rule.
It just moved to $100 million. It was $25 million.
Right.
We pick SEC registered for a reason. But
right.
I mean, that's just so that we don't end up with a lot of fly-by-night managers that don't really actually know what they're doing.
What's their fee?
It's, I think it's right around 75, 80 bips. Not any more than.
So for five guys sitting in an office, that's not a whole lot of change to share.
Well, they're.
Well, this is a different deal. This is like seven gals sitting in an office.
Yeah, this is different than the direct.
It probably smells better.
This is Capital Prospect.
Yeah, we're paying Capital Prospect 75 bips to put this whole program together, and they got to, out of that fee, they got to pay the sub managers managing it, so they're keeping.
I mean, their margins are.
Yes.
They've been, since the onset, have done very well.
Mm-hmm. They've been one of our better managers.
Okay, moving on to item 7B, report on top 10 holdings.
Okay, we also have the top 10 holdings for each of the managers. Overall, the active managers continue to do quite well in their top 10 holdings for the month of October. This was taken October 15th, a week ago. The indices for the month of October kind of surprised myself when we looked it up. They're up about 3-4% month to date again in October for U.S. indices as of today. And bond yields have gone from 260 to 251 on the 10-year U.S. Treasury as of the close today. So we're having another positive month in equities, strong month, and bonds should be up as of now for the month also. So we're looking up a good 2-2.5% total plan type return as of today, month to date. The one exception on the top 10 would be the last manager, Pyramus, has slightly more positions down than up, but every other active manager looks good. That's my report.
Okay, does anybody have anything specific with respect to item 7B? Okay, last chance, all in. Okay, moving on to item 8, Executive Director. A, discussion and action regarding fixed income manager structure. Paul, it gets bounced to you again.
Sure. Yeah, thank you. I wanted to put this on the agenda after last month's education session by two managers. The first one was PIMCO, an existing manager for us. We asked them to explore different type of products potentially in a rising rate environment and loosening the handcuffs a little bit. We have two memos here, one from Rick and one from myself, and we get to pretty much similar recommendations. Our recognition on PIMCO is the obvious lack of comfort with the unconstrained strategy as presented. We recommend just keeping PIMCO's assignment as is, no change there. We believe there's still a place for PIMCO in our portfolio. They provide a good complement to Dodge and Cox. They have a much more macro type of strategy versus Dodge and Cox's bottom-up looking at corporates, overweights, underweight treasuries. The other manager who we had come in and present was Prima, with the Prima Mortgage Investment Trust. This is a very conservative portfolio of investment grade CMBS primarily. They have a good long-term track record, and I had recommended a initial allocation to them, $50 million. Rick was a little more, I think, prudent in recommending $25 million. After kind of further review, I would agree with Rick that the board consider a $25 million investment with Prima in their PMIT, their Mortgage Investment Trust. This is a commingled fund. San Joaquin is in it. They run a separate account for San Francisco, a sizable separate account for them. We do gain a yield advantage of about 5.5-6% current yield, and their portfolio is priced about 88 cents on the dollar with the 4-year duration. So if that all matures at par plus the yield, we're looking at a 7-8% total return type of portfolio. They are ultra conservative. I hope you can tell that from Greg, who presented. Very diligent in going out and looking at the properties they invest in. The fund has a fee of 40 basis points, and this is kind of a private type of fund that would require Hanson and Bridget to review for us to make sure that we are protected, as we were with the other private vehicles that we looked at. So our recommendation is a initial investment of $25 million, see how it goes, and potentially add to that later. That would be under 2% of the total fund and would be added to the fixed income allocation. Although they invest in real estate type of debt, it is debt first and foremost and belongs in fixed income, I believe, and would enhance our yield in the fixed income to get a higher type of return. Although in a investment grade portfolio, that guidelines would not have to be changed, run in a conservative manner.
Where would the money come from?
It would come from most likely Dodge and Cox.
And why wouldn't it go into real estate?
It's debt.
But is it backed by real estate?
Yes. It could go in real estate.
These are mortgages?
These are CMBS,
CMBS.
Mortgage-backed
okay,
securities, yes. But instead of a pool, they're generally backed by one or two properties, which allows Prima to go out and visit the properties and model each one of them versus buying a pool of hundreds or thousands of properties.
So you take out of the $171 million, which you're wanting to reduce the size of anyhow.
What's that?
You take it out of the $171 million account. I was just looking at your chart of monthly review.
Yes.
And it would be more than doubling our real estate holdings.
No, it's not considering. He's considering it. He's considering it fixed income, not real estate.
Yes.
Because it's debt. It's not securities.
So you'd open a new.
But you're taking it out of Dodge and Cox fixed income.
Yes.
Which would come out of the $396
million. Out of $396 okay.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Exactly.
Which we've talked about restructuring anyway.
Yes.
We would
look for real estate to add private real estate properties, not debt related.
Okay. And these have all been checked. This isn't one of those deals where
it's part of the.
No one has ever looked at the property, and the property is actually a toxic dump.
One would hope.
Or, but we're going to get ready to return the toxic dump.
The house is dead beats.
And maybe the rate
that aren't paying our dumpers.
So we have a couple options here. We have the option, we have to go through and get legal review, as Paul said, through Hanson and Bridget, so we can have a motion if the board is comfortable with this. We can have a motion that pens this with waiting for the legal review to come back and then make a decision. or what we have done with direct lending is if the legal review comes back positive, we can grant authority to our executive director to institute the $25 million once we receive a favorable outcome from legal review. So we can do that, which is quicker, or we can say we want the legal review to start now, come back to the board, and if the board's happy with the legal review, we can make the $25 million allocation at that point.
I would add that the opening's on a quarterly basis, so the next opening is October 1st, which I don't want to make. So then it becomes
October 1st.
So it becomes January. December? I don't even know where I am. It becomes January. January 1st would be the next opening, so we have plenty of time if we start the legal review now to give you the option of it coming back to you before the January 1st opening.
Can we start the legal review without action?
Sure. That was going to be my recommendation. Yeah. We have time.
Yes.
So I would be more comfortable in case you have questions or any other board member has questions that come out of the legal review.
Why don't we see the legal opinion before we vote on it? So the chair could just instruct him to start. That'd be fine.
So contributions are on a quarter. I'm assuming distributions are on a quarter.
Yes.
Is there a limit to that distribution on a quarterly basis?
There is not, although the fund reserves the right, depending on how much the withdrawal request is and what their cash levels are, to pay part of it instead of all of it at one time.
We're still going to need a motion from this body to proceed because we're spending system assets to do this. So we just need a motion. Jeff, I like your motion. So
I would make a motion for Stan Sarah's staff to ask for legal review regarding this $25 million investment in the Prima Mortgage Investment Trust with approval to follow receipt of the legal analysis.
Receipt and review of the legal analysis.
Okay. I would second that.
Okay, so we have a motion, so eloquently put, by Jeff Grover, and a second by Donna Riley. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. I'm going to have Jeff make more motions. That went way too smooth, so there you go. All right, moving on.
We got Donna in a second. So that was
there you go. There you go. Moving on to item 9, committee reports and recommendations for action, standing committees, 9A, internal governments committee, 9AI. Discussion and action to accept the Internal Governance Committee. Moving on too fast here.
Okay.
Discussion and action regarding review of biennial investment policy revision. Sorry about that.
Okay, don't look much like Rick, but here we go. Basically what this is Rick and Paul have gone through the investment policy, and we have a red line version that's ready for committee review. And to expedite this process, we wanted to bring it to the board and have a discussion. Should the IGC committee be tasked? They are at this point tasked to do this. We would be to review the investment policy. Rick was thought was maybe other members might want to be involved in that process. So we thought it would be best to bring that to the board and ask what you would rather happen, whether we just had the IGC committee do it. We could possibly form an ad hoc investment policy committee and made up of people of the board and the IGC committee, a variation of options. And I know that Maria wanted to weigh in on it, and so I thought we'd bring it up for discussion, and then the board can tell us how you want us to move this forward. Our hope is to be able to bring this, have handout review copies today for review to the committee that is going to be doing it, and we'll have another committee meeting, whether it be ad hoc or IGC, depending on how this plays out. And then hopefully bring a final to the board for approval, for acceptance and approval, if possible, at the November 26th meeting. So, Maria,
Just to kind of give our perspective from the Internal Governance Committee, and that is, depending on what the pleasure of the board is as a whole, is the three members of the Internal Governance Committee, which are Joan, Donna, and myself, could review the recommendations as made the red line recommendations and go from there. Or another option for us, and it would be a recommendation of setting up an ad hoc committee, which is guided differently than our regular committees based on the rules. But I do have a question that came up in my mind. But so my recommendation would be three members of the Internal Governance Committee plus two to be selected by the chair. Now, would we have a problem with, again, the Brown Act? Because that would make five members of the board on the ad hoc committee. That constitutes a quorum.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
You may. So
really, it might be better to just stick with the Internal Governance Committee.
I'm curious, has anybody that's not on the committee expressed an interest in doing this?
Not that I'm aware of. So, okay, the committee plus one. It's like a dinner date.
You can do that if somebody wants to, but I'm comfortable with the committee reviewing it, that that's set in place already.
Yeah, is there a reason to expand it? Or?
It's quite a few changes in it from the previous years. The alternate investing piece has been added to it. The monitoring and reporting piece has been thoroughly vetted. So there are quite a few changes in it this year. It hasn't had a major look at rewrite like this for several years. Rick thought that possibly some other members of the board might like to be involved in the review process prior to the final. And that's why he wanted to bring it out for discussion in this manner.
So I'm the new kid, so let me understand. The three of you are going to review Rick's red line, make recommendations, and go back and forth with Rick. And then a final, that's what I just heard, would be presented to the board.
Right.
That's correct.
Without a further review.
It would ultimately, the full board would have to approve the recommendation.
They could choose at that point to take it and read it again. Mm-hmm. I mean, that could happen.
Change or modify it.
Sure.
Is also the Paul and the attorney going to look at it also before we come to
Paul's
the
already
yes,
looked at
Paul
it.
Paul will look at it again, absolutely. Typically wouldn't have gone to the attorney, but we could.
Well, if it's a major, it would seem to me that we'd want to have
a legal
read through it.
Now, one other reminder is we have to get this done before the end of this year. We only have two meetings left.
Yes.
What's
one? That's our
policy.
Our policy, yes.
And it's a policy of the policy.
Yes.
That it's every 2 years.
The bylaws.
Well, I think when it comes to investment policy statements, there's no emergency, is my opinion. And that if you're going to take the time to go through them, then the final document should be well thought out, because that's the document by which this board makes decisions moving forward.
Now,
it outlives all of us,
ideally,
and that it's complete, accurate, and it makes sense.
And it's not a static document, as much as we'd like to think it's pretty static. As one of the comments in the draft is we talk about the fact that we need to phase in the alternatives. So consequently, the target ranges look out of whack, even though they're not, as we're moving forward to full implementation on that. We talk about the fact that there will be addendums brought forth as we bring in the different alternatives and vet how each one works and how the monitoring for each one works. So in that sense, there will be addendums to this document brought forth as we move forward through the next year or so, and then biannually, everybody, the full document is looked at, and the tweaks are usually pretty darn small, but because there's been quite a few changes.
And nothing precludes the red line version being made available to any member who wants to.
Absolutely. To my knowledge, no. We can share it out.
Well, I think Jason brought up a valuable point, and that is he is the new person on the board, so maybe
I don't need to be indoctrinated with the
Oh, come on now. Come on. Come on.
You might have some good insight.
I write them for a living. So.
Well, there
well,
you go.
Well, then there you go. See? One way, a perfect way to dive in with both feet.
I would like to see the red line at a minimum and at least be able to have input.
No, hearing that, I mean, the other alternative, and kind of wasn't necessarily our preliminary recommendation, is that the whole board could look at it and weigh in. But then you have 9 opinions, and it could drag on.
I'd rather have my fingernails.
We could be here for a week.
Yeah, I don't think this is one of those things.
I'm not going.
This is not a situation where many hands make flight work.
Sure.
You know,
But I wanted to put it on the table that is another option.
I think what I'm hearing is that we have no volunteers at this point. That the pain is all yours, and this board will weigh in when appropriate.
It's a good thing I'm a nail biter.
So, and since we're not making any changes, we don't need to make no action. All right. There you go.
Thank you.
You have it.
Thank you.
And we'll save the pliers for Mr. Grover until later. So, all right. Moving on now to item 9AI, Standing Committee's Internal Governance Committee, discussion and action to accept the Internal Governance Committee's recommendation regarding the June 30th, 2013 and 2012 comprehensive annual financial report.
Okay, we just met this afternoon with a representative of, MGL. And they have completed this year's comprehensive annual financial report. And I'm going to stop for a second just to thank all of our staff that did, as always, a great job in assisting the auditors in getting this job taken care of. Yes, and this was probably one of the cleanest audit that we've had. There were no comments whatsoever, which is excellent. And you can't get any. I think that's platinum. So anyway.
We've never really had a bad audit, but to get one with absolutely no forward comments was just, it's pretty amazing. It just doesn't happen.
I agree. In 30 years in finance, I've never had an audit that was without any comment.
I think that's an excellent reflection of staff, our management, our board, and the organization as a whole. You know, we've also had, the article that came out a few weeks ago. You know, we're a top quality organization. So with that, it is our recommendation to accept the report as submitted by MGL.
So, hearing staff.
Second.
Okay. Well, you make a, since she's on the committee, how about you make a first?
Huh? As the chair of the committee, she can make that.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're seconding it. So first by Maria, second by Jeff.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? So moved.
Ready.
And I'm not seeing anything from council, so I don't see any closed session items. Wonderful. Moving on now to members forum. Do you have anything, sir,
no.
For yourself or Gordon?
No, I don't.
Okay. Council?
No.
Joan?
Pass.
Jason?
Nothing.
Jeff?
November 20th, Raven has set as its next advisory board meeting in New York. So I'll be going. And they pay for it, so I'll be spending the expenses today.
Yay.
Okay. Jim?
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman.
Well, nothing. Paul?
I would just add what Jason said on the investment policy guidelines. It is a very critical document, and I know we might have a deadline year end, but if it's extended past that to do it right. That's the right way to do it.
That's why I tried to volunteer him, but
I volunteered to look at the red line.
Okay.
We'll make sure you get a copy.
Donna?
Nothing for me.
Maria?
And speaking of red line, when would we get the report?
Right after the meeting.
Okay. Hard copy or soft copy?
Whatever way you want it.
Okay.
We've got it in both, actually. We can give you both. look at it.
I'm not commenting one way or the other. Mike?
No, sir.
Dawn?
I have one thing. Because we anticipate both the November meeting and December meetings, we only have one meeting in December and one in November. They will both be administrative and investment. We will technically be interviewing custody bank finalists, and there's a lot going on.
November
and December. Because of Sackers in November, we only have one. And because of the holidays, late November. So we're asking if the board is okay with starting the meeting at 1:30 instead of 2 in November and December, and then any committee meetings would be an hour before that. So is that, I'm hearing not heads nodding. I'm hearing heads nodding. So.
Yes.
Okay. So November and December board meetings will start at 1:30.
Be sure and put the time in bold, underline.
Yes, yes, we will. We will. 11/26, I believe, is correct. Yes.
And when's it?
It's earlier.
December 11th.
Yes.
The week after Thanksgiving.
Yes, a very short turnaround from meeting to barely 2 weeks.
Take a Monday off. Coming back.
You've got me for 2 more weeks.
Unless you change your mind.
We have a few more committee meetings here.
So that's all you have?
That's all I have.
I have nothing else to add. This meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you.
Sounds good.
Yeah.